All right, here we go. This is, I don't know what day it is. This is, it's Tuesday, February 26th, I believe it is now, 2013. And I'm talking with Ken Schultz. And Ken, you told me that if I didn't mind some ramblings of a what now, did you say?
Of an idle mind. You know, it's you have picked the right person, the right day, the right place.
Ken was at WHAS for, I didn't realize, 30 years, but
yes.
You came in 1978.
Yep.
And retired in 2008, so
that
we're going to cover some of those years here. But let's start. I want to have you tell the story about the first time you came to WHS. You weren't hired yet, but you came over for a job interview.
Yes.
Now, you were 24 years old. You were in St. Louis.
Correct.
What were you doing in St. Louis?
I was initially, I have a degree in meteorology. Mm-hmm. I am a meteorologist.
There school there in St. Louis?
I went to, I went to school at St. Louis University.
Oh.
But that was not where and how I came to Louisville. I actually, my first job was in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Oh, okay.
I was an industrial meteorologist. I forecasted for hire, businesses, industries that have weather-sensitive operations, farming. I was a forecaster for the Jolly Green Giant.
Really?
Yes, I mean, because they have huge farms throughout the country, and depending on forecast, they will cultivate or irrigate or spray or whatever. And did some radio stations there.
Oh, really? I didn't realize that.
It was a private weather service, very small, mm-hmm. located in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Worked there 2 years. And
so that was right out of school. Right,
right out of school. It was my first job. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I thought it would be my only job. It was hard to find a job in meteorology at that time.
Were you looking for a broadcast job?
No.
It didn't matter.
No.
So as a boy, you had not grown up saying, one day I want to be on radio or television doing meteorology.
Emphatically.
Really?
No.
How did you get the interest in meteorology?
I had a deathly fear of thunderstorms.
Huh.
As a kid.
Yeah.
It was just one of those things that it would startle me in the middle of the night, you know, just like a bad dream.
Yeah.
But thunder and lightning initially kind of spooked me.
Wow.
And I couldn't get really much of an answer from my parents. Loving as they were not really well versed in meteorology.
Yeah,
so
we're going to do this a lot, but I'm going to stop you.
Because yes.
We worked together
over
the years.
We haven't even gotten to your question yet.
We've got to tell this story. I remember that you would go back to New Jersey to visit your parents.
Yes.
And you would do home modeling project, remodeling with your dad. And one day you were in a discussion of whether it was a tropical storm or a hurricane.
Yes.
Off the coast of it. Tell that story if you would.
Well, it was late in the season. It was like November. And there was an early season nor'easter, mm-hmm. brewing. But it was a hybrid kind of storm. It had some tropical characteristics early on, but as
and
it moved into cold.
You would know this. Your dad wouldn't, but you would know this.
Yeah, you would think.
Right.
And we got into a discussion, which became actually kind of heated. And we were talking about, and my dad was saying it was a hurricane, this storm. And I said, no, Dad, I mean, you know, a couple months ago it could have become one perhaps because of where it originated. But I said, now it is a nor'easter. It's just a big low pressure system. Anyway, back and forth we went until it got to a point, I think I frustrated my dad because I kept saying, no, Dad, it's not a hurricane. And he sat there and said, but what do you think you are, some sort of an expert? And even my mom, who backed my dad, was always there beside him. Even she had to laugh at that one because, you know, it was kind of like, yeah, Dad.
Matter of fact, I am.
I think I am, yes. So
so you're qualified for that.
And I think he gave me that point, but he did not concede on the fact that this was...
You were an expert, but it's really no.
Yes, you know, so it was a draw. But one of the few that I had with my dad, I considered it a victory.
Okay, so you and your dad, you became the expert, but you were scared of thunderstorms, so you went to... How did that lead to meteorology?
Now, I'm talking as a child, you know, and it's just one of those things that eventually when you ask enough questions, you're directed, you get into school, there's a library. Library have books on this, that, and the other thing, and I was just taking any book that had clouds on it. You know, I couldn't read very well, but it was interesting.
Pictures were nice.
And there was a movie out that had come to TV. It was called The Wizard of Oz. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
I think I've heard of it, yes.
You might have actually acted in it. But here was this storm they called a tornado. And I mean, it was like, that doesn't exist. And my dad said, yeah, it does. And you get the gist of it. There was enough out there to really provoke curiosity. And so truly, it's one of those situations where an early fear turned out to be a career.
I'll be done.
Now, let's go to the second part of that equation. I had I hate to say a deathly fear, but I had anxiety attacks if I had to speak in front of anybody, including my family. I mean, I had to say Thanksgiving grace one time, and I thought it was going
really?
To end
wow.
me, because people were watching me, and they were listening to me. And so broadcasting was never,
really,
ever in...
Not even on the radar, then.
It was something that I could not ever imagine doing, because I truly feared it. I mean, I did have anxiety attacks. You know, when you had to do speeches in front of your classmates, that was worth, you know, 2-3 nights of sleeplessness.
That's amazing.
That's true. I mean, I'm not making it up in the way of anxiety. It was that bad.
Wow.
I mean, kind of a crushing sensation in the chest and that sort of thing. Anyway, it just so happens that as I got out of college, My sole ambition was to work for the National Weather Service. I just thought those folks were truly the people behind the curtain, omnipotent Oz. You know, these guys were weather people, meteorologists, and that was my career choice and path. Except for in 1974, when I graduated from college, the National Weather Service was downsizing. They were closing offices. They were taking people out of the closed offices and packing other offices.
Wow.
There was no availability, no room in the inn, mm-hmm. literally.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you had to cast a wider net. And it just so happens there are organizations out there that are called industrial meteorology, private weather, and it's forecast for hire. And I just happened to catch the eye and the ear of the owner of a Great Lakes Weather Service up in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Now I'm from New Jersey. He actually called me to check my accent. he told me after the interview, he said, if you had a real strong New Jersey accent, you know, he was going to thank me for the interest and
really?
Blow me off.
Wow.
So the accent was okay. He invited me up for an interview and eventually led to a job. Part of that job was doing radio broadcasting, and it was brutal.
Really?
I mean,
so the fear was still there.
Still there. You know, I'm just getting comfortable with meteorology now. I love the science, but this new aspect of what I've got to do. Long story short, you kind of find a midway point. You know, you start feeling comfortable, and kind of outgrew the little weather service that I was working for. I had bigger ambitions at that time, and there are larger private weather services out there, so I went and was hired by a larger, a more nationally known one in St. Louis.
Okay.
And that one was Weather Corporation. Same thing, business for forecast for hire, just a lot more forecasts.
More,
I mean, there was
opportunities and things, yeah.
You know, they had utility companies from east coast to west. There was about 30 radio stations, but there was also, you know, construction companies. There was a lot of industrial forecasting. And was there, and again, this is where I'm going to be. This is my life from this point on. Now, I'm sitting at home, and I'm 24 years old, and I'm watching this character on TV do weather. And normally, I'm fine with that. You know, I think everybody has a unique talent. But I think it was Cindy. Somebody said to me, are you ever going to try that? Not do that. Are you ever going to try doing TV weather? That's a bothersome word for me, because now I've got to try. I mean, it was not a challenge. It was not a gauntlet thrown at my feet. It was literally just, are you going to try to do that? And it's like, you know what? I'm 24. if I don't try now, 30 years from now, I'll be wondering what if.
Huh, interesting.
And if I fail, I'm 24. How bad could it be?
Possible of starting again.
There's a lot of opportunities. I'm newly married. We have no kids. You know, everything is, now's the time to try. And I sent out my resumes, and there was one silly station in Louisville, Kentucky, who bit on one of my resumes. I had a couple nibbles, but when they kept asking, when the question came up, what's your prior experience, it was rather slim. And HAS said, well, I'll tell you what, we'll bring you down here and we'll interview you. We want you to do an audition for radio and TV because that's the position we're looking for. And if you're interested, let's do it. And so, you know, this is it. This may be it.
Yeah.
And so now we pick up on your question.
You came over for an interview. And you're ready. You're coming over. You can do your interview. Go back to St. Louis and see
yes.
what
happens. Yeah. I mean, how it's you know.
Yeah, right.
It's
45-minute flight. Yeah, sure.
Yep. It was. And they said we're gonna fly you in. They booked the arrangements. It was I got into the station at WHAS. I think it was like on August morning at 8:30.
8:30 in the morning.
And
get
I
down, am, you're home by noon.
Yeah. You know, I'm seriously. Well, and we had a flight out. They had we're not sure about schedules and everything, and so we'll book you for a flight out about 5 in the evening. And I said, okay, that's cool. Because there's a lot of people we want you to talk to. Yeah. Okay. 8:30 in the morning. They brought me in, and I am primed. I mean, I am.
You're ready.
I am so ready. You know, it's like, okay, this is my big chance. I'm prepped. I've got everything. And they said, well, okay, now we're going to sit you here in the newsroom. And there's a couple meetings. The guy that was talking to me at that time, I think he was like a program director of sorts. I forgot the title that he had. But he said, I've got a couple meetings to go to. So, you know, just sit here. I will be right back.
Kind of absorb things a little bit.
Yes. Yeah. And so I'm in it. Yes, sir. Absolutely. Oh, this is exciting, sir. So I sat in the newsroom from 8:30 till noon.
No action.
No action. I have not seen the gentleman that has picked me up. I have not seen him. It is now, they're doing the noon news. And finally, his name was George, the fellow that was shepherding me around. His name was George. George finally comes flying into the newsroom, says, it's 10. I'm sorry. Let's go have a bite to eat. Sure, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah, I'm not quite as sharp as I was, but I'm still following instructions. So we go to, I think it was Koons's downtown.
Oh, yeah.
4th Street.
Yeah, the old Koons's, yeah.
Just 2 blocks down from the station.
And the station was at 6th and Chestnut.
6th and Chestnut. And so it was very nice, little walk, and the weather was nice and all that. Sat down at the table, and I appreciated the lunch, and I even said to George, I said, George, thank you. I said, now it's get a chance to sit down and chat with you, and you know, this is very nice. And he said, well, don't get real comfortable. I have to be back in the station in like 20 minutes, so we're going to have to eat quickly. And it's like, oh. No conversation, because now it's just a matter of consuming nourishment. It's a long haul before you get back to St. Louis. Stock up on that food. I'm stuffing breadsticks in my pocket. So anyway, so we didn't get anything accomplished at lunch, and I was back in the newsroom at 12:30. And George said very nicely, he said, I've got a couple more meetings. There's a lot going on right now. I apologize, but we still want to get you to do an audition for radio and for TV. And he said, it shouldn't be very long now. He said, so just be patient. Okay. George, I got a flight out at 5. Yeah. Oh, no problem. All right. Sat in the newsroom until 3:30. I have been there since 8:30 in the morning. I have indigestion from a lunch that was well eaten, but quick. So I'm sitting there at 3:30, and finally George makes this appearance and says, oh, he says, we're kind of running tight on time. I want you to come in and talk to the radio news director, because really you're going to be working under him. So
And this was
Glenn Baston.
Glenn Baston. Okay.
Glenn Baston. And I'll say this up front. We became great friends, and I admired Glenn and all that. But this is the interview day. I have not met Glenn. So I walked into
Glenn
his...
Glenn probably hasn't been through what you've been through today. So.
No. He probably saw this skinny, fuzzy-cheeked kid sitting in the newsroom and wondered, you know, gosh, I mean, what are we hiring, you know, high school kids? So I walked into Glenn's office, sat down, and had a little bit of a chat with Glenn. And Glenn was very, very... conscientious about the news product going out on radio. Very conscientious.
Newscast coming up soon.
Yeah. Yep. And he was very much involved. And he sat there, and at one point he kind of leaned back in his chair as if it was a much bigger chair that he had. I mean, it was, and he said, well, while you're here, why don't you prepare me a forecast? And he did it with this little twirling hand, you know.
You can still see it today, can't
and
you?
I'm still doing it. You know, too bad this isn't video, Jack. So I'm sitting there, and I'm looking at him, and by now I have just about had it. You know, I have been sitting in the newsroom since 8:30 in the morning. Well, now it's like 3:45. I have a flight out of 5. And here's this guy I've never met, all of a sudden wanting me to, with my hand twirling in the air, prepare him a forecast. And I said, politely enough, I thought, I would have been glad to have done this for you any time over the last 6 hours. I said, but I'll tell you what, since I don't know you either, why don't you, and that would be Glenn, why don't you just prepare me a newscast? Oh, and I waved my hand just like he did.
This is the guy interviewing you for the job.
Yes, he's going to be my boss. I'm sorry. You got the picture. At this point, it was like George, who was in on the action, the way he reacted, I think he thought we were going to get into a fight. And with no way, shape, or form was it going to ever become physical. But George jumps up. Whoa. Ken, maybe if you could just do a simulated weather broadcast for radio. And I said, well, I thought that's what I was supposed to be doing in the first place. I would be glad to do that. So in the meantime, you know, let me just knock this one out. And if you want me to prepare you a forecast, I'd be glad to come back some other day. I said, but you have to realize I'm making forecasts for businesses and industries that are putting lots of money on every word that I say. So I do make forecasts, and I do it for critical situations every day. This is not one of those. And it takes me hours to prepare a forecast, and I would not do me or you any justice by just pretending I am coming up with a forecast. That's how we kind of left it. But I don't think Glenn was terribly impressed with me at that point in time. And let me say, I wasn't terribly impressed with Glenn at that point in time. So I knocked out the radio portion of the interview. And then they ran me into the TV studio, and Jim Mitchell,
Anchorman,
very much respected. Yeah. He was the guy that was going to give me the pretend pitch to weather, and I was going to have a chit chat with him on the anchor desk, and so he was my co-pilot on this one. And we ran into the news studio. I have never seen the news studio. I have never seen the weather set up. They showed
sitting
me
in the weather.
I've been sitting in the weather. Yeah, for 6 hours. Did I say that? I mean, there were switches to flip and there were boards to spin. And George says, you're going to have to do this in one take. He says, we're running out of time. I'm sorry. It's just, so I bumbled and rumbled through my TV interview, came out back into the newsroom.
Getting close to 5 o'clock.
It is now past 4, and I am just like, please, you know, just let's put a fork in this, call it done. Now we want you to talk with the general manager of WHAS, and at that time, WHAS radio and TV were one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There was one general manager, and his name was Fred Osler. Nice guy. He was in the newsroom. They had thought ahead
this time
and asked him to come downstairs. But there was no place to talk. And we're standing in the newsroom.
Busy newsroom. They're getting ready for a 5 o'clock newscast.
That's right. And you know how that is. Yeah. And so finally somebody said, well, we can talk back here in the file room. And so in the file room. So it's a little room off the newsroom where I had all the filing cabinets. They had boxes of old scripts. And they said, sit on one. This is my interview.
Make yourself at home.
I sat on a box of old scripts, paper sticking out the side. Fred, the general manager, is sitting on this old metal desk. They didn't even have a chair. And he's sitting there, and people are just kind of up against the wall listening in. And we conducted this interview in like 5 minutes. And Fred says, so, George, what do you think? And George goes, I think we should hire him. I am like, are you kidding me? Have you been with me all day? I'm thinking this. I haven't said it, but I'm just kind of looking at George, and I said, don't you need to talk to Mr. Bastin, who I don't think I'm really impressed, since I'm going to be working for him. Oh, no, that'll be all right. Anyway, condense the goodbyes. I get on the plane. I fly back home. I get into our apartment, and Cindy's like, you know, anxiously awaiting words. This was days before cell phones. You know, there wasn't the immediate communication. So Cindy's sitting at home waiting breathlessly for news. And at this point, we're expecting our first child. So I walk in, and she goes, well, tell me all about it. And I did.
Just like you told me.
Even longer. And she stops me before the end and goes, Ken, don't be upset. Don't be downhearted. There will be other opportunities. This was just the first time. You know, just don't beat yourself up. I said, Cindy, they offered me the job. And her next remark was, and you'll take it from them? Are you kidding me? You would want to work for that organization? I was like, well, you know, beggars can't be choosers. So that is the story of how I accepted. And you know what? It really kind of colored my entire career at HAS.
Really?
It was bizarre at times, funny, made at least a great made-for-TV movie in my own mind. But the characters that I was thrown in with, it really kind of set the pace. And as I said, I worked with Glenn Bastin for, I don't know how many years.
Yeah, he was the news director, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we were, I mean, I respected his news decision. He respected my weather opinions, and we got along great. But that interview could not have gone worse.
You know, it just occurred to me, though, Fred Olson was a fellow said, let's hire. He was gone in 6 months, wasn't he?
Yes, six months later. Yeah, he was gone. And then the new general manager had no clue why they would have hired me in the first place. So, and like I said, kind of set the tone for 30 years.
That's amazing. 1978 to 2008. Wow.
2008. Yep.
So now, were you doing both radio and television, or were you, Glenn was your boss, so you were in radio technically, or?
Again, remember, we were one big happy family.
Yeah.
But there were different budgets. And so what eventually happened, Glenn wanted a meteorologist on in the mornings.
Because they were just really starting to carve out a really presence on WHAS radio at that time, weren't they?
Exactly.
Wayne Perkey was doing the morning.
The cast of characters. I mean, Wayne Perkey was the morning DJ.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
His name is Perkey. And he was. Sometimes incredibly so, but that's.
Well, but that was your first assignment doing morning radio, doing weather on morning radio, or
my job entailed Monday through Friday morning drive time radio and Saturday evening weather on TV. It was a 6 day work week.
Yeah, I hadn't realized that. I thought that you'd come for television and kind of splashed over to radio.
No,
the other way around.
Glenn wanted somebody. I say Glenn. I mean, because that was my immediate superior there, but somebody wanted a vocal voice and not a canned voice,
mm-hmm.
not a weather service
like I was working for,
you know, who working out of Pennsylvania,
uh-huh.
doing our weather. They wanted a live voice, like they had a live voice doing traffic, Dick Gilbert,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so one of
those
first
elements
radio
in there.
Stations,
yeah.
to hire their own meteorologist, so to speak. But I wasn't just radio. I was radio and TV. Radio is where I answered, and TV was where Chuck Taylor
Okay, so Chuck was the weather on television.
Chuck was there 2 years before I got
there. Were they have other weather people there at that time? Just the two of you?
Chuck was the first
meteorologist. Some others came along later, I know. But
Chuck was the first to be hired. I was the second. Mm-hmm. I believe it was Gary Rizzo, the third meteorologist.
Is that right?
And we stayed a long time.
You did, yeah.
So, I mean, getting into the 90s, there had only been three hires.
That's amazing.
And we were all still working here.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, now, so what were mornings like doing morning radio with Wayne Perkey, and you would prepare your forecast? And let's talk about that a little bit.
Okay. Can I go back to WHAS? It was a unique experience right from the get-go. Yep. They hired me.
Uh-huh.
They did, and I accepted. I did, and I came to work. It was like September 6th or something was my first day. I don't know. Somebody can check a calendar and find out if it was a Monday or not. I was supposed to go on the air at 5 o'clock in the morning with my first forecast, and I walked into the radio studio, and there's Wayne. And Wayne is just this exuberant, you know, hi, Wayne Perkey.
You hadn't met before?
We had not met.
Wow.
Well, because the interview
process. Wayne wasn't in that line of, couldn't work Wayne in. By that time of the day, he was long gone.
It would have been swell if we could have. But so I walked in, and Wayne was behind the console and said, hi, Wayne Perkey, and who the heck are you, and what are you doing in my studio? Nobody had told him.
Wow.
That A, I was coming on board, but B, what was I going to do?
Yeah.
Nobody had said, hey, Wayne, we hired a meteorologist to do weather for
who
you.
Was the news guy while you were doing that? Do you remember who that was?
In the morning, Mark Watkins.
Okay.
Mark Watkins, I believe, was doing the news at that time. And I think he was a recent hire.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that, and somebody can probably go back in the archives and prove me wrong, but that's what I remember. So there.
Everything was new to you. So.
Oh, well, and fear.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so you're fearful still at this time of...
Gosh, yes. In fact, you know what? Honestly, stayed fearful through 30 years to a certain degree.
Yeah.
I was always
anxious.
Not the
panics, but, yeah, not the panic attacks.
But very anxious about, you've got 2.5 minutes to make your plea.
Wow.
You better have it down right. And so I always felt the pressure to perform. And I did not, initially I thought that was terrible, but over the course of the years I embraced that because it keeps you really sharp.
Yeah.
When you think you can screw up and you know you're walking on a precipice, you're very, very alert.
Yeah, you have to do.
And I wasn't all that good. And so, and like everybody in broadcasting, you know, when are they going to fire me? You know, always looking over your shoulder. I think it really worked to my advantage in some way. It probably took 20 years off of my life, but it worked, I think.
Well, you don't look 74, so you're... You're not.
Thank you, Jack. That was unkind, but also very common from you. So Wayne, actually, we became good friends. Just a tremendous amount of respect for Wayne because he carved out time on his show. If he was an egotist, he could have blocked me. I mean, he could have blocked anybody.
Yep.
It's his show.
Sure.
It's a Wayne Perkey show. It wasn't Wayne Perkey and Company at the time or whatever. It was Wayne's show, and he was the star. But he allowed people to come in and participate. And he was also smart enough to realize that it was good stuff. It took a little while to get all the people in place, but we had Fred Wishy,
mm-hmm.
Barney Arnold, Dick
doing
Gilbert.
Farm things, Fred and Wish doing barn. And Dick was doing the traffic. And,
Dick
and
Gilbert,
had your dad called to remind him this time that you were an expert? Had your dad called?
About this time, yeah, when my ego was taking some flack, you know, for not really being the smoothest broadcaster on the air. Yeah, Dad was shoring up all that other stuff. You know, you're not an expert. Yes, I am. No, you're not. You're already pretending to be. The real experts are on TV here in Philadelphia. Oh, I didn't know that.
So you had this cast of characters, though. You had Barney and Fred.
Oh, listen. Let's go back to the fact that I was a 24-year-old fuzzy-cheeked kid.
Yeah,
truly,
yeah.
My first, you could see some of my first promo pictures.
And this is not a beginner radio station or television station.
That, That's the point. This is the 50,000 watt blowtorch, as it was lovingly referred to. This is the home of Kaywood Ledford. This is the home of Barney Arnold. This is the home of Phyllis Knight. Shall I go on? Yeah. I mean, you know, just all already Hall of Famers.
Yep.
And here comes
you're stepping into it.
You know, who could barely say his name without having some sort of an anxiety attack. And there was a lot of pressure. There really was. And there was occasions where I could hear myself cracking under it. But those were my tutors. Jack Fox. Well, okay, maybe not so
careful,
much.
Careful, but, careful.
But I'm just saying, Barney Arnold was the farm director. And he, when I first showed up on radio, he had just had a heart attack. He was out. So I did not work with him immediately. In fact, when he came back, he kind of came back on a part-time basis, and eventually he just retired. And I can remember talking to Barney the first time. I walked into his office and introduced myself, and he was back now from his medical leave. And I said, "Hey, Barney, my name's Ken Schultz. I'm the morning meteorologist that they hired, and I've heard so much about you, and just wanted to come in and say hi. And what do you think about the station hiring a morning meteorologist?" And Barney, the nicest man in the world, sat back in his chair and said, "I don't think much about it. I don't see it. I don't get it. But you know what? That's not my call. So welcome." So I said, "Okay,
Barney, wow. That was Barney. Yeah.
And let me emphasize again: it was not said in a nasty way. I asked the question, and he just answered it. He was honest as the day was long. But when you think of my tutors, there was Barney. Now I didn't work with him long, but Fred Wishy was his replacement. And again, you know, we're talking an icon here. Yeah. So I worked with Fred. Wayne Perkin, we've already mentioned. Dick Gilbert, and for those that remember, you know, he was the champion of the 74 tornado outbreak.
Yeah.
Phyllis Knight, who made her impact not only locally but nationally. I mean, she had something to say to me from time to time. Kaywood Ledford, who gave me the great advice: don't show up on Fridays. That's when they fire people. No, I'm serious. He brought me aside one time to tell me that. But the news people, and I already mentioned like the Jim Mitchells, the Kirstie Wilds, the Chuck Taylors.
Yeah.
Those were the tutors that this fuzzy-cheeked 24-year-old, mindful of mush, if I can use somebody else's analogy, those were the people that shaped my early career.
You mentioned when the mic wasn't on the other day, we were talking, you mentioned your encounter with Phyllis Knight. Tell me about that and her advice. Everybody had some advice for you.
I was the new kid on the block before there were the new kids on the block. I was the low man on the totem pole. I was the fuzzy-cheeked kid. And I kind of had a job description that was a little bit wide. I was the morning radio meteorologist. But you know what? If there's any kind of severe weather, you're staying for as long as there's that threat, obviously.
So at this point, it's just you and Chuck
Taylor. And on weekends, you know, we had TV programming. But you know what? Sometimes weather occurred on Sunday, too.
Yeah.
And although we didn't have a newscast, and TV did not have a newscast on Sunday until 11 o'clock in the evening, and then it was only 15 minutes long. That's how,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they gave me that day off, unless there was weather. So there were times you could work weeks, you know, morning, early morning, noon, night. I mean, you were just, but I was 24. And learning, and I was grateful to be where I was. Anyway, I'm walking down the hall one day after a particularly long stretch of time that I had been on the air in some fashion or form, and maybe even filling in for Chuck. You know, he might have been sick, but there was a stretch of time I was there constantly.
18, 20 hours a day.
And Phyllis was walking up the hall. And here is this, you know, very prim, proper matriarch of broadcasting, and we're approaching each other, and she kind of grabs me by the shirt and throws me up against the wall. Now I say throw, but I mean, I wasn't fighting back. You know, she kind of just wheeled me around and pushed me up against the wall. And she said, "What are you doing?" And I'm thinking, well, right now I'm trying to keep my knees from knocking, Phyllis. I don't know what. I don't know. Did I do something wrong? I mean, what did I say? You know? And she says, "Listen, you cannot keep working like this. They are not going to put a statue of you in the lobby in." Wow. At that time, we had that pond or the fountain. Fountain. Yeah. They're not going to take the fountain out and replace it with a statue of Ken Schultz. If you let them, they'll kill you. I mean, they'll work you to the bone. Say no.
Wow.
And this is from Phyllis Knight. Yeah. And I just sat there and my jaw dropped and everything. And she said, you know, basically after that, have a good day. and she walked on. But her point was,
wow,
you know, you can only do so much. And then after a while, it not only affects you, your health, but it also affects your production.
Yeah.
And maybe, who knows? I mean, after a couple of weeks of early mornings, late nights, 7 days a week, you know, perhaps I was going on the air and babbling on, as I said, you know, the ramblings of an idle mind. Maybe it might have been the first opportunity to do that on radio, on a 50,000-watt radio station, and Phyllis picked up on it.
That's wild. We had some interesting people to work with all the time. Let me ask you this.
Great advice, too, all of them.
Your first forecast was at 5 o'clock in the morning, but you didn't just walk in and rip stuff off the wire. What time did you get in? What time did you start? How much preparation for that first forecast?
Well, you know, I carried over the same work philosophy. Philosophy, that wasn't the right word. Basically what I was told to do in my other jobs. I carried that over into broadcasting. In my private industrial days, your first forecast might have gone out at 3:30 in the morning. Who knows? I mean, it might have been
depending on the industry what they needed.
Yep, mm-hmm. Like Atlantic Electric and Power, AEP, was a big one that we had along the Eastern Seaboard, and they might have needed their forecast at 3:30 in the morning. Who knows? And it was at that point in time, you, as a meteorologist, you had to come in and you plotted your own maps. I mean, this was kind of in the days as we were going from hand plotting to computer, but it wasn't
still
quite
all
there.
New, yeah.
And so there was a lot of hand plotting to do. So you got in at midnight to do a forecast for 3:30 in the morning. And I kind of carried over that same time frame. I'm not going on the air unprepared. If there's anything I have initially going into this, it's not my broadcast savvy, it's my forecasting savvy. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to make sure I've got all the T's crossed and I's dotted. And so I got in at like 3 o'clock in the morning and worked 2 hours to get the forecast. And then of course you had to type it up and you had to prep people or explain things to some of the news people and do all of that. So
what were your sources for information at that time?
Didn't
have the computer or
WHAS though had all the facsimile machines that we needed. We had a fax machine that printed out the weather maps that came from the National Weather Service.
Yeah.
We had the teletypes. Again, that information came from NOAA, mm-hmm. the National Weather Service. We had a local teletype. We had a more of a meteorological, spit out some garbage here that nobody can read, but meteorologists. So we had that. We had radar. WHAS owned its own radar. It was the Action Track Color Radar.
I remember that now, yeah.
It was the first colorized radar in this area. So we had that.
So you had to consider all that and consult all that information as you're preparing.
All of that, yes, exactly. And it's just more than saying, hey, it's going to be a sunny day today. I mean, because you were into a five-day forecast even then. Now we're doing, 12, 15 days. Okay, you know, wink, wink. Let's all believe that one. But, you know, there was not just today's forecast. It was today, tonight, tomorrow, and then the next 3 or 4 days. And it's a process to do that. Granted, in the summertime, you can knock out a hazy, hot, and humid forecast in less than 2 hours. But in the wintertime, when you're dealing with the potential for snow, sleet, rain, freezing rain, thunderstorms, all of that, it took all of 2 hours, if not more.
that first morning you walked in, you did, the newsman said, here's the weather, and you did your weather forecast in what, 30 seconds or something? How long did you do your weather forecast? And was that the end? And did Wayne say something to you afterwards? Or when did, I guess what I'm trying to say is, when did it start, because you became an integral part of that program. When did that happen, when you went from just giving the forecast and then Wayne would say, well, wait a minute, let's talk about this. Did that happen gradually, or when did that happen?
You know, that's, I've never been asked that question, and I don't have a definite answer.
Or was
it
there from the start?
I think it morphed, but Wayne was always Wayne. And for those that know Wayne Perkey, probably understand exactly that definition. Nobody was going to escape his studio without being introduced. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Bring something to the table, by golly, because you're in my studio.
Yeah,
and he never said it that way, but that's kind of the way it felt. Is, you know, yeah, I've been, you're invited. Sit down, please. Can I get you coffee? But let's get something from you too. So it might not have happened right at that 5 o'clock, the first one.
Yeah.
But at 5:20.
Yeah.
I came back to do just weather, because weather about every 20 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, on the hour, half hour.
Yeah. And then you'd stop in the 20 till and 10 till and 20 after 10 till and call.
About 4 or 5 times an hour.
Fill in some of the details and everything. Yeah.
And so
that's where the personality
after
started coming in.
Was the first time that he said, okay, well, we're introducing somebody new today to our staff and to our family here. And, you know, that was the first opportunity.
You didn't tell him about the job interview, did you?
I did not tell. I did not mention that job interview. Even to Glenn Baston until like 30 years later. We had a big anniversary get-together.
It's
like, Glenn, do you remember? And he had forgotten it, but I never will.
He had other things on his mind there. That's amazing. Very interesting. Well, that also, that style that Wayne had, that made you a personality. I mean, because he began to talk about you, about your wife, Cindy, about your kids, and all that sort of thing, about you going home and helping your dad remodel. All that stuff came out. That was part of the fabric of the show, wasn't
because
it?
Because that's what he did.
Yeah.
I mean,
and that was okay with you?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, that took the pressure off.
And did that help you ease from those anxiety moments? Of course, I know you'd come a long way from where you were as a kid. Did that make you more at ease? And everything?
The times when we could converse like that, oh, absolutely. It's nothing more than what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
Ignore the microphone.
Yeah,
I talk to you about whatever you want to talk about, as long as you want to hear. And so Wayne, not just me, but Wayne brought that out in, me. And he didn't need much help with Dick Gilbert.
Yeah,
Dick was kind of already there. But he made the news person. Outside of news. No, in news, in weather, you're the professional. Don't mess around. Outside of those arenas, now we have a chance to talk.
Yeah.
And that's where the news guy got to infuse his personality. Sports.
Mm-hmm.
Read the scores. Yep. Tell us about the highlights of last night's game. You better. But then afterwards, brought everybody in to talk about, well, what'd you do over the weekend?
Yeah, that made it.
And it made it more palatable, not just to us, but I think to the listening audience. If there's one thing I remember about 5 o'clock in the morning or 5:30 in the morning, 5:30 is when we start the farm show.
Yeah, oh yeah.
5:30 to 6:30.
Yeah.
And, you know, at this point, we were kind of moving away a little bit from a lot of farm programming to some farm programming and whatnot.
And but more that, urban information, yeah.
More urban, absolutely. But we had people who were doctors, lawyers, teachers, listening to the farm program because of just what we were talking about. Fred, tell us about the barrows and gilts. And then afterwards, you know, tell us about what's going on the farm.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And we would have these gab sessions. I mean, we were like these gossipy neighbors talking on a 50,000-watt radio station, pretending nobody else is out there listening.
More
or less just kind of roundtable discussion. Anything was game.
Yeah. Do you ever, now you mentioned that, getting out across the country. Did you ever hear anybody from New Jersey who knew you or that listened and had any feedback from any of those people?
You have to know. Yeah, you would have to know my family. But my folks, my roots are in the Philadelphia, New York area, New Jersey. And we're very blunt people. And we can be very colorful in our language. We can be downright blue, if you know what I mean. All right, so there was a moment in time where I'm in the newsroom, and somebody comes running into the newsroom and says, Ken, Wayne has your brother on the air. And I am like, oh my gosh, this could be really, really bad if Wayne's not careful.
Because your brother is your dad's son also.
My brother is yes, absolutely. Howard Jr., to be exact. Howard did not mince words. I mean, he would come on and say, how the are you? You know, and that would be, and that's my fear is Wayne's got him in a hold during a commercial and hasn't really done anything with Howard. I go, racing down into the studio. But Wayne, have you put Howard on the air yet? No, we're just going to do it. Put me on first. So Wayne flips the switches, the commercial ends, and hey, Kev, we got a surprise guest. And without anything else, I just say, Howard, you're on the air live. And there's this long pause, and Howard goes, well, that just took about a third of my conversation. I knew it. But Howard was going to work in New Jersey. It was pre-dawn.
That's amazing.
And that's 50,000-watt radio station, clear channel.
Yeah, that's
amazing. We boomed out over 40-some states, including New Jersey. So, a little taste of home then.
Yeah. Did you get other calls like that from other people around over the years?
Not a whole lot. I mean, my dad and mom, when they would come out to visit, they'd leave bright and early on because it took 11 hours to drive. And so they would listen morning show until it faded out in daylight, and so they would comment. And, but it was always fun, and there was a couple people who had moved here from South Jersey or knew I was from that territory, so I had a lot of conversations with them. But I would be remiss if I didn't mention again. Everybody played a part. I told you about Phyllis Knight. Kind of slapping some sense in the side of my head. I told you about Barney Arnold. Let's just be honest. Kaywood, the don't show up on Friday. Here's this icon, and that was his advice to me, and I still remember it. Wayne, of course, was Mr. Personality. He really showed the fuzzy cheek kid how to talk to people. He was very open.
Yeah, very good at that.
And
he was a people person.
And nobody
community
is
person.
And nobody is an enemy unless they make themselves that. I mean, you accept people
point,
for what
yeah.
they are, and you welcome. Mm-hmm. And I learned a whole lot about off-air antics from Wayne. I mean, just how he interacted with people. I mean, it was a study.
You don't know this, but the first day I went to work there in 1973. I walk in this building, and the announcer's room was back about, the far southwest corner of the building, and I walk in, and there's this guy, tall, skinny guy. He's the only guy, and he walks in and says, hi, I'm Wayne Perkey. That's same thing.
Yep.
Same thing, yeah. First guy I met.
Who are you?
Yeah, right.
What are you
exactly,
doing in my office?
Exactly right, yeah.
But I also want to mention, and Dick Gilbert, of course,
that was some time when you and Gilbert and Perkey were going. That was great.
What a funny guy, but he knew his stuff. I mean, I don't know. I'm always conscientious of time, but Dick Gilbert told me about his interview.
Oh, really?
He walked in, and they were interviewing, talking about having a traffic tracker. And Dick walked into the boss's office, took off his watch, put it on the table. And the boss is kind of looking at him. And Dick says, if I can't convince you in 2 minutes, we've got nothing else to say.
Is that right?
And the rest is history. But I also want to mention, too, something about Fred Wishy, and that is Fred was exactly the way Fred seemed. I mean, there was no – in fact, most everybody I worked with at HAS, people would ask that question all the time. What are they really like after, or when they get away from the microphone, when they move away from the TV camera? And by and large, 98% of them were just like they were. Fred, obviously, included. But what I want to say about Fred, he instilled a thought with me that's still prevalent at this time. I was having a kind of a bad day, whatever reason. My lead pencil broke. I don't know what made it a bad day, but I was making it a bad day. And Fred, at that time, just kind of, you know, stopped me. It was in a commercial break. And said, you know, Ken, no matter how bad you think today is, these are your good old days. So really enjoy them. I mean, 20, 30 years from now, you'll look back at this time and say, that's the best it was.
Wow.
So I'm sorry about your day, but just keep it in perspective. Always did, and he was dead on.
Yeah. That's the way he lived his life, too, wasn't it? He was always like that, yeah.
I mean, just put a whole new spin on the day and stuck with me to this day. I mean, as bad as it gets, you know, really, it's not all that bad. But back then, especially at 24, how bad could it be? And he was kind of telling me that. Yeah. He's just saying, you know, ease up on the gas a little bit. You're okay. Huh. And this is as good as it will ever be. Huh. And it was. Those were I spent like 18, 20 years of those 30 doing morning radio with Wayne and Fred, and that was the highlight.
Oh, we are.
Yes, I was on TV. Yes, I was the chief meteorologist, but the highlight of the broadcast era of Ken Schultz was those 18 years.
Yes, good times. Who was the radio program director and the radio station manager when you came? Do you remember that?
You know, I should.
Was now, Hugh Barr still there when you came?
You know,
was Hugh gone?
I think Hugh was gone. Jerry David Malloy was the program director. Uh-huh. And even Jerry David gave me some great advice about wearing your emotion on your sleeve
in
broadcasting. Having a bad day, similar to Fred, having a bad day, sorry, I don't want to hear it on my radio station. Mm. And he was right. Nobody wants to hear that. Mm. You know, I mean, they want to hear the radio. People tune in for radio. They want to be entertained. And yet, some folks would carry their, whatever, unhappiness right to the microphone. Mm. Who wants to hear that? Jerry David was the one that kind of slapped his sense into me on that. But he was program director. He'd have to run through some other names. But I can't.
Yeah, I was not there during that period. I came back shortly after it. I left in 76, just before you got, and came back in 84. So,
yeah, I'm drawing a blank.
Bill Campbell was in there then, or
Bill? He came to be while I was there.
Mm-hmm.
But who predated him?
I can't.
That's one of those questions that, you know, if this was a $1 million game show, I would have to phone a friend.
Well, let's talk about some of the news people that you worked with during that time. You were on at various times of the day after a while. You weren't just morning. You'd be on various times. And later, you even did some afternoon stuff when you became... So who were some of the news people you worked with? You remember that?
I mentioned a name right off the bat that I never thought I would draw on, Mark Watkins. He was the first, I think, morning person. Glenn Baston eventually became the morning... newscaster.
Okay.
But it took some years. Jerry Leitzel.
Incredible
wit, fun guy.
With Burgess and Mike, were those guys
Dan
there?
Dan Burgess.
Was Paddock still there? Or Paddock,
no.
Chuck Paddock had
Chuck
gone
Paddock had left prior
Dan
to
Dan Burgess, work. And they had Mary Jeffries, Mary McCarthy, some people like that.
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah. There was...
Because you went afternoons also, so you had a lot of people.
Well, depending on the day.
Well, that's true. I mean, that's right, yeah.
You know, after I pressed the collar down after Phyllis Knight, you know, sat there and said, don't let him do that to you. Okay, all right, Phyllis, I got it. You know, your day was whatever your day had to be.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, is 78, you were still kind of operating under the... the 60s format of when news played.
Mm-hmm.
And what radio stations did. No, you didn't have all talk.
Yeah, that's right.
You had to get six records in a half hour, you know, and you had to mix them up, and you had that male, female artist, and, you know, you had the all these standards still.
Yeah.
TV had a 6 o'clock newscast and 11 o'clock newscast. Noon, I mean, but they didn't have morning.
Yeah.
They had three newscasts a day. Weekends, as I told you, Sunday, you had a 15-minute newscast at 11 o'clock. So that evolved. Mm-hmm. And as that evolved, so did your day. Then news became a little bit longer in the morning. It was no longer just 5 minutes, and like 7 o'clock, it went almost 15, you know, and you filled it. And you filled it with weather and you sports and news. And as you filled these blocks up in radio, you took away the music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And so now you're only playing one or two pieces of music every half hour. And then finally somebody said, why even bother?
Yeah, okay.
Let's do all talk. And so that really captured your day because you were studio bound from 5 to 10.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I ran in and out a lot, but I mean, basically 5 times.
Well, it even went, you know, not only the weather, but you, as the station got more involved in events, you began to get forecasts for the state fair, for if they're going to Albuquerque for a Final Four.
Yep.
All that kind of thing, yeah.
And then TV, which I was doing some, they wanted a meteorologist at noontime. Mm-hmm. Wayne Perkey was the weather guy.
Oh, really?
That did news. Dick Gilbert was the weekend weather guy.
Really?
Until I got there.
The helicopter pilot. Huh?
Dick Gilbert, the helicopter pilot, eventually said, I'm not doing weekends anymore. And that's another reason I came along.
Huh.
Wayne, again, it just happened. We've got a meteorologist in-house. Let's use him at noon.
Because so Wayne had done weather in Mobile, Alabama. Yep. He was not a meteorologist, but he had done television weather. Yeah. Huh. Interesting.
And so I started to do that. Now my day used to end at 10. Now it's going until 12:30 because it's a half-hour newscast. Well, you know what they did with that noonday? They expanded it to an hour. Now you're there until 1 or 1:30 in the afternoon. And then, by the way, they started a 5 and 5:30 newscast in the evening. They threw a 10 o'clock newscast in eventually there, too. We're all talk on radio. We're almost all talk on TV. So your day...
It's about time for another talk from Phyllis.
it really... But you know what? I mentioned snippets of influence, you know, what Phyllis had said. Now, does Phyllis walk down the hall all the time and throw people? No. But there was a point to be made.
She stays with you, yeah.
And she stays with me.
Yeah.
Fred Wishy stays with me. Wayne, obviously. Kaywood. All of these people, remember, I'm wide open to their influence. And it was good influence.
Yeah.
I mean, they were top-notch people. And I just, Wayne always used to tell me, you don't realize that you've stepped into something good. And he was right.
How about that?
I mean, just call it what you will. I wouldn't even say it's divine providence. I honestly think it was just luck.
That is pretty remarkable to go for your first broadcast job to a situation like that and be there for 30 years.
That's years.
Yeah, that's impressive. Very impressive.
So...
So you worked with a variety of disc jockeys also, or announcers, whatever you want to call them. Burbank wasn't there when you did.
Gary Burbank.
Did you do some with Gary? Did,
absolutely.
Oh, that had to be
oh gosh, remember that the snow sharks?
Oh, that's right, the snow sharks. Yeah.
I was in, I'm not involved in that, but that was my era.
Yeah.
I did some voices for his show.
Really?
Until... Glenn Baston found out, and he said, you know, news people don't do that. And he was right. I mean, it was a credibility thing, but I'm just saying that nowadays nobody would think about it. Nobody would blink an eyelash about that. But back then, the credibility issue was paramount.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You know, you didn't do any blue humor, or you didn't say anything that could be...
You didn't do commercials?
No. Yeah. Like I said, I did a little voice work. And Glenn put an end to that, and rightfully so. That was not what news people did at that time.
The Binghams owned the facilities at that time. Do you have any association with the Binghams?
Oh yes.
Oh, tell me about this.
It was, forgive me, my voice is a little on the raspy side. I'm getting over one of the Ohio Valley things. So forgive me. But yes, it was early on in my career. Oh, I'll tell you what. I'm going to go back to my interview.
Okay.
I've forgotten about this. At 8:30 in the morning. Oh, man, how could I possibly have forgotten this? This makes the story even more bizarre. George picked me up at the airport, drove me back to HAS. We came in through the back lobby. I'm walking down the hall, and I am talking to George on my left side. We are to take a corner to my right and walk into the newsroom. So I'm concentrating on George, trying to impress him greatly, and not paying any attention about making the turn around the corner to the right. Anyway, I'm talking to George, make the turn and run smack face to face, body on body contact with Barry Bingham Jr. Oh. I mean, to a point where, you ran into him literally wrapped your arms around him because he was just there and the forward momentum carried you.
Wow.
Here's this very dapper individual with the handlebar mustache. He's wearing a trench coat. And he's just sitting there, and I mean, I'm sorry, forgive me. And he's just like, no, that's not your fault. No, you know, that's not. The nicest guy in the world. George, by the way, has his jaw open just like you do. He's sitting there with his mouth wide open. And, I'm sorry. He's, what are you doing here? This is Barry Bingham Jr. What are you doing here? And I said, well, I'm in on an interview, and they're looking to hire a meteorologist for the morning and for Saturday night on TV. And, well, best of luck to you. So, yeah, I'm
sorry.
But you
didn't know who he was at that time.
He was
even the name didn't mean anything.
He said, hey, I'm Barry.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that was it. Hi, I'm Ken. And so we part, and we're walking in the newsroom, and George still has his jaw open. He says, you know who that is? I said, Barry? He said, he owns this block.
Should have been a tip for the day, Ken. It should have been a tip to how the day was going to go.
You know why he was doing there? He was learning the business.
How we doing?
He is Barry Bingham Jr., and what he wanted to do was find out every aspect of what was going on in that building behind the Courier.
Yeah.
And he was working in the film production room.
Right?
I mean, with the chemicals, that's when we had actually film.
Yeah,
that's not videotape. And so that's why he's wearing that trench coat.
So he's learning.
He was learning
how
film
So it sounds like it was a good association with the Bingham Spears. While you didn't work closely with him, but it was a good atmosphere and everything.
6 months after I'm hired, Barry Bingham Jr. shows up in the TV studio. I was filling in for Chuck one night, vacation, whatever. And here comes Barry. Now I know who he is, you know, and I'm about ready to go on the air, and he just shows up. And I was never so distracted in my life.
Wow.
Because here's the guy that owns this whole block.
Yeah.
You know, and he's got a chair, he sat down, and he's just staring at me. And I did the weather, and it was awful. I mean, I didn't have a whole lot of, you know, broadcast chops at that time, had less with him sitting there. So I get done, and I'm sweating profusely. You know, I get done, and I, you know, chat with the anchors. They go into a commercial. I have to run into the radio studio because we have a broadcast going on radio at the same time. So I take off, and I go into the radio studio. I'm sitting down. I've got my hands on my head and my hands. I forgot. It might have been Burbank at the time. What's going on? And I sit there and I said, oh my God, I just did the worst TV broadcast in the history of this fine station. And the Barry Bingham Jr. was there. And I've got my hands over my eyes, you know, I'm just cradling them. And I'm not paying attention to Gary Burbank. And Gary all of a sudden says, well, Mr. Bingham, welcome. And I look up and Barry Bingham Jr. had followed me into the radio studio to now listen to me do the worst radio broadcast in my early career. And he was there. He was there primarily for me to say welcome. He said, you've been here for 6 months. I've heard some nice things about you. He said, I'm just wanted to stop by before I went home and say how delighted we are that you're working for us. And I mean, now my jaw is wide open.
That's nice. But that's class. That was class. Yeah.
Class act, always was with me. Yeah. And I really enjoyed working for the Binghams. I really did. They were wonderful people to me.
Yeah.
And like I said, enjoyed that time. But I thought that was special too.
Yeah.
And odd that I had forgotten that part where I ran into him. Man.
When he came that 6 month time, had he remembered the? Did he remember?
I don't think he did. But
That's great.
That interview, like I said, set the stage.
You worked with we worked with Terry Miners for a little while, didn't you?
Well, you know, as time progressed, again, a lot of third meteorologists came and went, mm-hmm. but it was primarily Chuck and myself that worked together for 20 plus years, and then Chuck came down with cancer. And he passed in 98. And at that point, I was still working morning radio and doing noon TV. And they had started a morning TV program as well. So I was doing
back and forth.
Several hours of TV mm-hmm. as well as radio. I was quite busy, but also very, very secure. Felt good about where I was, even at that point. I didn't have to be, you know, at a New York City or Philadelphia or anything. I didn't have to be there. I was Louisville was home. My kids now have been born and raised here. And then Chuck passed, and the opportunity was presented. Would you like to become chief meteorologist for TV? And, you know, that was another one of those. This may be the only opportunity to ever do something like that. So, you know, I accepted that. Mm-hmm. And in essence, even though we had morning meteorologists, it started to close that position. Radio no longer hired a meteorologist by themselves. They used TV personalities. Mm-hmm. Myself, Chris Phillips was mm-hmm. one of the morning meteorologists. He's the one that took over after I did. But we were all TV personalities now, property.
Different contract with radio.
Yes. So I was the only meteorologist ever employed by WHAS
radio. How about that? As the sole meteorologist. How about that?
But when the opportunity came, I did go to TV full time. That meant going to the afternoon evenings, mm-hmm. and that's where I got to work with Terry, and only Terry in the afternoon. And some of the folks, again, that played off of Terry in our office, you know, the Beth Andrews and folks like that. It was a great team. And actually, I was involved with that for about 10 years.
Yeah.
Afternoon, evening, drive time, radio.
And the Clear Channel owner. You were there. That was the Clear Channel ownership then.
Yep.
Change in ownership.
And yep.
Maybe a little change in difference in philosophy and things like that.
But, always, yeah. But the personalities kind of remained the same.
Yeah,
that's what
true.
I'm saying. I mean, you know, Wayne, I left. It didn't mean that when Chris Phillips came in, he was welcomed. And yeah. mm-hmm. and he became part of the family. And so it worked. I was mentioning in the afternoon, I couldn't do all the broadcasts in the afternoon because of other commitments, but we had other people in the office who were indoctrinated in that family feel, so to speak.
Gary Rizzo.
And like I said, Ashley Chisholm, there's a name, Beth Andrews, and then those that followed her. We're all kind of indoctrinated with that same feel. This is meant to be fun as well as informational.
Everybody carried it off well, too.
And carried it off despite changes in management.
Yeah.
Despite, you know, the difference in the stories above us, what we did on the ground stayed pretty much the same.
Before we run out of time, do you remember some specific weather moments? Let's see.
Good and bad, you mean? Clever.
Let's see. I remember we were together on the air one time in 1985 when the radio tower blew down. You were the last words I think heard on that tower.
The last words.
Right in the middle of your forecast.
It was a severe thunderstorm morning.
Yeah, right.
And that's what happened. I mean, our tower went down in a severe thunderstorm. We had severe weather in the region. And I was broadcasting a warning when
you were,
it's like, are we on the air?
We went off the air, and I remember a phone call. A lady said, I live out here on Flat Rock Road across from your transmitter. Do you know your tower's on the ground?
It's in my backyard.
Let me call somebody about that. But yours were the last words, I think, that went out. It was in the middle of that forecast.
That's another thing to write in my memoirs.
Yeah.
I only have a page, you know, but I'm looking to fill it out a little bit more. There is one other episode, and why this one pops into mind when so many could have, but I want to say it was 1990, and it was a crusade for children. Mm-hmm. And I think we had already moved to the first weekend in June at that time. Crusade was always like the third weekend in May, but there was so much happening. I mean, you had the Derby, yeah, everything that preceded. And then you had elections. Yep. There was a time that we had elections in May. And so they decided to move the Crusade back to the first weekend in June. I don't know how many of those we had had up to 19. It was either 1990 or 1992. Look it up. You can. I'll let you do that. But I was filling in for Gary Rizzo. He was our weekend meteorologist, and I said, well, I can do this Saturday evening show, because it was only at 6 o'clock, because we went to the Baumhart Theater to start the Crusade live from 7 until whenever it went off the air Monday morning. So Gary wanted to do something that weekend. He said, you know, would you mind? I said, one show? Yeah, I can knock this out. No problem. Crusade, right? We had a huge tornado outbreak, and this was the first time that we're dealing with, okay, we've got tornado warnings. We generally stay on the air with tornado warnings, and Crusade, aren't in our studios. We are not in contact with each other. How are we going to do this? And it became quite an episode. But the moment that led up to you know, what was one of the moments that you remember in all your broadcast career was, I shouldn't be laughing, but it was, who was the headliner that year? B.J. Thomas was the headliner. He just started to sing Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head. Yeah, Raindrops Keep Falling. And again, there's no contact other than back at the station. We could flip the switches, and you no longer can hear B.J. Thomas. Not only on your TV set, but even in the Baumhart, it was whatever I was saying, and here's B.J. just starting ready to wail, Raindrops Keep Falling. And they use that moment to come to me, and I said, well, B.J., there's a whole lot more than raindrops that's falling out there. And it went into the tornado warning. It was, I think, for Clark County, which
right across
they the actually area. Had to evacuate the bomb part. Yeah, and evidently, B.J. was not happy with me. So I guess my one claim to fame is I ticked off B.J. Thomas with the tornado warning. But I do remember that it was a very long Crusade weekend.
Yeah. Rizzo, don't let Rizzo take it.
I did not let him forget that. Although, I mean, he, like most weather folks, loved to be involved in weather. Yeah. And so he kind of was beating himself up on that. But it was like, I would have gladly have let you. But it was a long, long crusade for children.
Well, 30 years, you've got lots. You packed a lot in. They didn't know it was going to be 30 years. In fact, you wouldn't even think it was going to happen from that first interview. And
we moved here, and I told Cindy, 1978, I said, we're going to be here about 3 years. I said, so don't unpack. And I meant mentally. Yeah. You know, it's like, I suspect 3, no more than 4, definitely not 5 years. But that was all that I had planned. And as we got closer to that 30th anniversary, she's like, can I unpack yet? Wow. You know, so it just goes to show you. You never know.
Well, you made a big impact on the community still doing that through Humana. You're doing some things for Humana now. But people don't know this, but as we were setting up the interview, some people came through and were looking for directions to another place in the building. And he said, well, hi, Mr. Schultz. And that's 5 years now that you've been gone.
It's been five years, and that's very rewarding.
Yeah, it's nice.
You know, I did my thing, and I knew my limitations. As I said, I was deathly afraid of public speaking. All of these things I know behind the scenes, But to have somebody, and to have worked through it, you know, yeah. and made enough of an impression that 5 years after you've left broadcasting, to be still stopped and say, hey,
listen,
used to listen to you every morning or watch you in the evening. You don't realize how sweet that is.
Yeah, part of people's lives. Well, it's been a great time. Thanks for taking the time to just go in the archives, and people will be listening to this for years and be laughing for years, too, and that's good.
And still wondering, why in the world did they ever hire this goof?
But, well, we're glad they did.
I am, too.
Same good. Thanks, Ken. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jack. I appreciate it.